And now for something completely different.
It's a rich man's world. Forget everything you've been told by others before. Get ready for the real deal. The full story. Real talk about money, markets, life. Now, it's The Real Investment Show with Lance Roberts. Presented by RIA Advisors.
And good morning at 6:06 as we get the show underway today on this pre-hump day edition of The Real Investment Show. I'm your host, Lance Roberts. Brent Clanton here this morning.
Good morning.
Of course, Russell Sherrill driving our Length Challenge bus. We're all going to get to school on time today for a change. So big to-dos out in Katy Land, by the way, where I live.
Really?
Yes. They are redistricting housing.
Housing.
Yeah, so basically, or schools,
okay,
I should say.
Okay,
yeah. You know, where you live and then what school you attend.
Oh, they're gerrymandering.
Yes, thank you. That's the word I was looking for. So we got a letter in the mail. And literally, our house, where our house sits, is 10 feet from the border.
Really?
Yeah.
On the good side or the bad side?
No, the bad side. So, but here's the funny thing about this. So my daughter goes to Katy High School.
Yeah.
She runs track there. She runs both JV and varsity track and all of her friends and competition, all this stuff. And so where our house sits, they drew the line literally about 10 feet in front of our house, which would move her to Tompkins High School, which is brand new high school, by the way. It's you know, Katy High School has been here since like 1800 and something.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's ancient. Been there forever.
They used to use covered wagons to bring the kids to school there.
They're still out in front. but my older son, when you go to high school there, he says, yeah, that water fountain hasn't worked since like 1910. So apparently they don't fix the water fountain.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they built this brand new high school. And it's because Katy's growing like crazy.
You know,
population is just booming out there. So they're having to build all these high schools to accommodate all the families that are moving out there. So they've built this brand new high school called Tompkins High School, and it's best facilities. Of course, you know, we spend way too much building schools, and so they spent some enormous amount of money building this high school. Well, my daughter doesn't want to go there because she runs track, you know, and she knows she's got her competition down. She knows what she's doing at Katy, and she doesn't want to leave there. She likes her coaches. So my wife goes to explore what options we have.
Yeah.
Right. You know what it takes to stay in the high school you want to stay in?
An act of the legislature?
No. You sign a form and pay $35.
What?
That's it.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm not sure what the whole purpose. I guess a lot of parents are just going, okay, well, I'll just move over here. Yeah, but for a form and $35, you can stay in the school you want to stay in. So
wow.
I'm not sure how that equates out to anything, because supposedly, right, it's to alleviate the overpopulation of these schools.
Right, to balance the classes.
So how does $35 fix your problem?
Oh, well, that's the government solution to everything.
Exactly.
Just charge a fee.
$35, that solves the entire problem. If everybody paid $35, we won't have an overcrowding problem, apparently. Government at work.
Simple.
You got to love it, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, this is the big hoorah in my house right now is over this. But let's talk about important stuff. You know,
okay.
My wife got a new dog.
Yes.
Yeah. So we talked about this a couple weeks ago. So she's been going through the housebreaking process, et cetera. And her mother, just recently had to put her dog down. And so she went and adopted a 5-year-old dog.
Okay.
Right. Because she's elderly. She wanted an elderly dog and named it Bella. The new dog's name is Bella.
It's Italian for pretty.
Yes. What's your dog's name?
Sophie.
Sophie. Hold on. I'm looking.
It's French for yappy dog.
Let's see here.
You have a list of dog names and translations?
Not translations.
Meanings? It's the dog name lexicon.
Okay, I'm scanning through 200 names.
Uh-huh.
Sophie's not on the list.
Don't let her know that.
Bella's number one,
yeah.
Dog name wise.
Yeah.
That was top 10 dog names. Bella, Charlie, which was my first dog.
Yeah.
Way back when. Luna was number 3.
Really?
Yeah. Apparently you throw a C after that.
And a Y.
Lucy's number four. Max is number five. Bailey, Cooper, Daisy, Sadie, and Molly are the top ten. My two dogs' names didn't make it.
Which
They're
were?
Not on the list anywhere. Because, I mean, you know, there's dogs on here, right? You know, it's like, there's some interesting names. You know, Bear made number 20. Yeah.
Adam's got a bear.
He does? Yeah. He has a bear?
One's bear.
One of the best dogs that I saw was one of those English pubs. Pugs.
Yes.
Named Meatball. That was.
I like that.
That's not a list either. No, but so we're a Second Amendment family.
Uh-huh.
Right? So our original dog is named Gunner.
Yep.
So we got a new dog, and what do you think the kids named it?
Pistol Pete.
Nope, Sniper.
I like that.
And it fits him.
He
like sneaks around the house, and when mm-hmm. Gunner's walking through the house, he comes charging out of nowhere and nails him. So, but yeah, so it was interesting, though. The dog's name, original name, was Heath. Because he's this half terrier, half something. We don't know. I'm thinking about posting a picture on Twitter because we don't know what he is. I think he's part cat.
Well, pictures of dogs and cats do real well on social media.
Well, I know, but I think he's like half cat, half dog because the way he looks. I'm not sure what his other half is.
Yeah.
But he kind of acts like a cat in a lot of manners. So maybe somebody actually successfully bred a cat and a dog. I'm not sure.
Veterinarian anomaly.
Yeah, the vet doesn't even know what he is either. He's this mix of something. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he's part terrier. But anyway, so his original name was Heath because he's kind of his brothers and sisters in the litter were all named after candy bars. So there was Snickers and Milky Way, and he's Heath Bar. And so when we renamed him, of course,
they kept dropping one. They called him Butterfinger.
He didn't make it. But it was interesting though, because my wife takes him back down to the vet to get, you know, the snip time. Right. So got to get that.
Sorry,
fixed.
Heath.
Yeah. He wasn't real happy about that.
It was a Heath clip.
Exactly. So she takes him down there and she goes, "Oh, it's Heath." And she goes, "Oh no, we renamed the dog." And she goes, "Well, what's the name of the dog?" And she goes, "Sniper." And the lady's like this super liberal lady. She just glared at her. And she said it was the most uncomfortable moment ever. So she writes it down. She like writes it down very slowly, "Sniper." And then she spells it with two P's. So now when the dog shows up at the vet, they call him Snipper.
Snipper.
So this has all become quite a challenge here. But anyway, so yeah, top 10 dog names. If you've named your dog Bella, that is the number one dog name of 2019. Now, see, wasn't that important information to know on this Tuesday morning?
My life has been enriched.
All right, coming back, you've got to talk a little bit about the Mafia and why they're better pension fund managers. Believe it or not. Don't go away. I'm Ghost Lance Roberts. We are back. Very suspicious. Writings on the wall. Very
suspicious. Let it fight the fall. Get daily investment news you can use. Delivered at the speed of the internet. Sign up for the Real Investment Report now at realinvestmentadvice.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with our RIA advisor's free financial planning tool, MyBlocks. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help to determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlocks, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the client portal tab, RIAAdvisors.com.
All right, and welcome back to this morning's edition of the Real Investment Show. I'm your host, Lance Roberts. We'll get serious. We'll get to work. We'll be serious today. It's Tuesday.
Technically speaking,
it's Tuesday. And speaking of, we do have our Technically Speaking post come out. It's not technical today, though.
No?
We'll be releasing a 3 minutes or so video this morning going over the report.
We're going to do it on analog tape.
Exactly. But we're basically reviewing third quarter earnings. So what happened with earnings in the third quarter, and you know, what to expect coming forward. So I'll be out a little bit after the show this morning, so get by the website talking about that. And one thing that we did talk about, though, in terms of earnings in that report was the impact of trade. And, you know, this market's been very elevated over the course of the last few months because of the idea that both the Federal Reserve is instigating QE. That's been lifting asset prices, and hopes of a trade deal right around the corner. And this has been every day, right? Trade deal, just almost done, almost there, almost got a trade deal. Larry Kudlow just yesterday, we are so close to a trade deal. And then Trump comes out this morning and says, well, maybe we'll do one after the election. Markets didn't like that this morning. Futures are down fairly sharply. Dow's down about 102 right now. S&P's down about 9. You know, but this is really kind of two points to this is that, you know, Trump saying that, well, maybe we'll just wait till after the election to do a deal. And it's really up to me whether I make a deal or not is complete honky, because China has just said yesterday that they won't do a deal unless basically we drop all tariffs. And that's not going to happen. So this is good spin by the president to simply say, yeah, well, maybe we'll just wait till after the election to do a deal. This is kind of reminiscent of when Obama was in office. It's like, just wait till after the election. I'll do a deal with you. Speaking to Vladimir Putin, I have more flexibility. The reality is, we've talked about this for a while, there's not going to be a trade deal. The trade deal that was being negotiated, this phase one trade deal, was a disappointing one at best because it didn't really do anything. And now that China wants a complete removal of all the tariffs in exchange for doing a deal, that really makes this a no-deal situation. So the only real response that Trump can have at this point is simply just defer this down the road till after the election and hope that it doesn't impact the election. In the meantime, though, this does put the markets at a bit of risk. So be a little bit careful here, because the markets were dependent on getting a trade deal done. The real question now is whether or not those tariffs increase on the 15th of December. My best guess is that he'll also defer those until after the election. We'll see what happens here in the next couple of days. But again, we talked about hedging our portfolios a couple of weeks ago. We added a short hedge to the markets to protect against this bout of volatility that we expected to pick up. It's you know, playing its role here over the last couple of days. So, again, we'll see where this kind of plays out. We'll likely remove that hedge if we get oversold enough here in the short term. But next week, we have mutual fund distributions coming, which should put additional pressure on the market. So there is some risk to the downside here. So be a little bit careful with your allocations and with your portfolios. So over the holidays, I watched that new movie on Netflix called The Irishman.
Yes.
With Al Pacino and there's
Robert De Niro.
Robert De Niro. Mm-hmm. It's the Martin Scorsese kind of final gangster, you know, melodrama.
Godfather soft.
Yeah. 3 hours of your life that you will spend doing this.
It's like, good grief. Are we never going to wrap this up?
I know, right? I thought the last 40 minutes of it, basically, if you get through 2 hours and about 20 minutes of it, you can just go away. The last 40 minutes is just really just kind of dragging stuff out that doesn't need to get drug out. But anyway, the movie's very good. It's a typical Martin Scorsese film. And if you watch this movie, you have to then follow it up immediately with Casino, which was 1995. And why do I say that? Because the two play together. What's important now, I'm not going to spoil anything for you about what I'm about to tell you. This is common knowledge.
Yeah.
Okay. But there's an interesting byline to this if you don't know history and financial history to a great degree. There's an interesting byline to this whole movie. So in the movie, the Irishman's about Jimmy Hoffa, right? And what happened, you know, the rise of Jimmy Hoffa and Scorsese's view of what happened to Jimmy Hoffa. Of course, we really don't know. But this lays out a premise of what actually happened to Jimmy Hoffa. But so,
spoiler alert.
I'm not going to do anything.
There are no scenes filmed in a football stadium.
is that even relevant to the conversation?
Well, yeah. Because a lot of people thought I was buried under the end zone.
No, he was not. Well, we don't know where he was buried.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
So, there you go. Anyway, stop spoiling the movie, Brent. I'm trying to be very careful here.
Okay.
For people that want to see this.
Yes.
But anyway, in the movie, so Jimmy Hoffa is the head of the Teamsters Union, head of the UAW, and of course they have this big pension fund that they're running. And they have it's the wealthiest pension fund in the country. And of course the mob figures out that, hey, I can get low interest loans from the United Auto Workers. And that's exactly what happened. Now, this is why I say you have to follow the movie up by watching Casino. Santoro was one of the guys in the movie that borrows money from the pension fund. And what does he do with the money? He builds a casino in Vegas. And the UAW is providing these low-interest loans for all of these different ventures for the mafia. A lot of them were building casinos and doing stuff out in Vegas. And the mob was making money hand over fist because Vegas operations are very profitable. I mean, you know, the women, they're bringing in women and alcohol and flying people in from all over the place and treating them like royalty. And, you know, they're spending money at the casinos like crazy. And so the casinos are very profitable. The mob is skimming money off the top of the casinos. They're doing very well. Everybody's making money. The UAW is making money on their pensions, right? So then Rudy Giuliani comes along. Now, this is the part of the movie you don't know, right? So after Casino, right? And after, you know, the whole UAW thing. So the UAW is running this pension fund. Pension fund's doing great. They're fully funded. Everybody's happy. Mafia's making money. The pension fund's making money. Investors are making money out in Vegas. Gamblers are making money. Everybody's making money. So
truckers,
it's a good thing.
Are retiring rich.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So then Rudy Giuliani comes along as the Attorney General of New York, and he decides he's going to clean up the mob, and which he does, right? So he goes after the mob, and part of that cleanup also takes the pension fund and turns it over to Wall Street, which destroyed the value of the pension fund. So the point of the story is that there's the illegal mafia that actually are actually pretty good investors, and then there's the Wall Street mafia who are terrible at it. So be careful which mafia you're going to deal with. But there's actually a bigger lesson to this as well, which is, you know, there's an interesting byline. So if you watch Casino, like I said, so watch The Irishman, because it tells you about the rise of the UAW and how the loans are getting made and why the loans are getting made to these casinos in Vegas. And then watch Casino after it, because Casino is about the mob money getting invested in the casinos in Vegas. And then, of course, it's the rise and fall of Robert De Niro again. Poor guy. The rise and fall of Robert De Niro again in Vegas, right? But it's interesting, because when you look at this, in Casino, they talk about the laws of gambling in Vegas. As a good example of this, they have a whale that comes in, and they give the guy $2 million to come in to gamble. So the casino gives a gambler $2 million to come in. They comp him, they fly him in, they give him hotel room, you know, his food, everything is comped, and give him $2 million line of credit. Well, he wins, and he's starting to leave. He's going to take his winnings and go. But Robert De Niro very quickly goes out, wrangles him back up, brings him back in to the casino, and gets him back to playing until the guy loses everything that he won, plus got $1 million into his own pocket before they would let him leave. The point of that story is the house always wins. And this is the whole premise behind investing in general, is that if you invest too long, and you play the game too long, you will eventually lose. It's a function of risk, and it's a function of controls. Good gamblers know when to leave the table. Good investors know when to leave the table. And it's not about trying to get every last little bit of money off the table before your hand turned cold. And this is the one thing that we don't tell investors, right? And this is one thing that Wall Street doesn't tell investors, because it's not in Wall Street's best interest. But the point about this is that Investing is about management of risk, and sometimes it's worth leaving the table and leaving some money on the table. It's okay to let somebody else have some money. You don't have to try to get everything off the table, because by trying to do that, ultimately, you're going to start digging into your own pocket. The house always wins. It wins on Wall Street and it wins in Vegas. The differential between the average retail gambler and professional gamblers, which actually can make a living at gambling, is they know when to leave the table. So you have to understand the same thing about investing. Markets are up over 300% over the last decade, and a lot of people are betting that this is going to continue longer term. The hand's been hot. The question is how long will it stay that way? Be right back.
Got questions for Lance later? Ask now at realinvestmentadvice.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with RIA Advisor's free financial planning tool, MyBlock. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlock, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the client portal tab. RIAAdvisors.com.
And welcome back to the show this morning. I'm your host, Lance Roberts. This afternoon at noon, we're releasing a podcast, so make sure you get by our website, realinvestmentadvice.com. Click on the podcast tab and, the YouTube tab. My apologies. The YouTube tab. Click on the YouTube tab at the top, and it'll ask you to register, subscribe. If you subscribe to the YouTube site, we will email you this afternoon at noon when we release our latest podcast, which is with Thomas Thornton. Thomas Thornton is the founder of Hedge Fund Telemetry. Very smart guy, very technically driven, really understands markets very well. And believes, and his philosophy is basically that data is rooted in a very unusual place within the markets, and it makes perfect sense when you hear him talk about this. But you know, the important thing about Tom Thornton is that he's not bull, he's not bear, he's just simply an analyst for the market. So you know, what are prices doing? Where things are headed? And it's a really good podcast. You'll enjoy it. Again, it's going to come out at noon today. So simply go by the website, realinvestmentadvice.com, and click on the YouTube tab link, and we'll notify you this afternoon when it comes out. But, you know, talking about how data is rooted in kind of an unusual place, you know, I was just talking yesterday about I'd gone to see Ford versus Ferrari over the weekend, and talking about, you know, all the technology that goes into racing, and you know, all the fragile components and very minute adjustments that it takes to win a race. Well, he kind of relates the same thing to Formula One. Go ahead.
I'm a big Formula One racing fan. So back in the early 90s, they would put sensors on every part of the car. And then when they would go around the track, all that data wirelessly would go to the pits. The guys in the pits would crunch the data, and then around the next turn, they would say, hey, turn down your brake bias, speed up, save gas, whatever. And it was similar to what I did when I worked at my hedge fund, because I would get in very early, 5:30 every morning, and I would get info from all over the world. And I would have to take all of that and put it together and find out exactly what was the most important for our firm. And basically, just like those Formula One drivers would balance their cars for the ideal setup, we would do that for the ideal setup on our portfolios.
And you know, it's interesting, too, because when I was watching the movie Ford versus Ferrari, they've actually, you know, Ford's out there on the track trying to help Carroll Shelby, you know, developed this race car. They've got this car jam-packed full of computers and sensors even back then, right? And finally, they wind up just ripping everything out and sticking yarn all over the car to figure out where the flow dynamics were wrong. But again, it's, you know, technology is not always better than doing it the old way. But the point is that, you know, understanding, you know, where the data is coming from and what the data is telling you can help you make a better investor. This is going back to what I was saying in the last segment, talking about investing versus gambling, right? If you're simply just sticking money in the markets, hoping markets are going to go up, that's gambling, right? You're just basically betting that prices will be higher tomorrow. It works for periods of time within the markets. Unfortunately, drawdowns in the markets tend to wipe out the bulk of the gains from the previous advance. So whatever gains you think you may have are likely going to get wiped out if you don't pay attention to what's happening with the data. So the difference between a retail gambler and a professional gambler is understanding the risk and the odds of every hand that is played. That's what data tells you. And understanding what the data is saying, how things are flowing, where the risks are, can help make you a better investor over time. Now, the latest indicators, not surprisingly, show excessively high bullishness. We've talked about this over the last couple of weeks. Sentiment polls are at all-time highs, and Thornton, Tom Thornton, actually includes in a collection of his data, which he identifies and uses key pieces of information.
Bottoms are a little easier to call than tops, as you know. And I would say that what I try to look for are triggers, and triggers that I'm looking at right now are, I use DeMarc indicators for market timing. One of the things that I am happy about is that we've had a very long trend. What we've seen is a recycle of the DeMarc countdown, and that is a very rare occurrence, but the S&P futures, the spiders, the NASDAQ 100 has a combo 13, so that's another indicator of trend exhaustion. So I like to tell people that, look, I say, hey, when you see these clusters of these indicators happening all at once, and DeMarc on Bloomberg has a new product called Research 2.0, which allows the user to screen different indices, different monitors that you might have, that will find these exhaustion points.
Now, you know, and one of the other things, and we've talked about this a good bit on the show, is, you know, what's been going on with stock buybacks. And over the last couple of years, stock buybacks in particular, and this is something we also note in today's post on earnings and talking about where earnings are right now for companies. Stock buybacks improve earnings by lowering the number of shares outstanding. It doesn't mean you sold more product. Doesn't mean that your company is any more profitable. Doesn't mean you're making more money. It just means that you lower the denominator of the calculation of how you get earnings per share. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, except you need to understand what's driving that. Over the last couple of years, almost 100% of the net stock purchases have come from share buybacks, companies buying back their own shares. So the ability to control earnings per share, right, to beat estimates, et cetera, has largely been supported by stock buybacks. And investors have become extremely complacent that stock buybacks at these current levels are here to stay. The problem is they aren't. They're already starting to slow down. They're going to slow down more next year. But the big issue is that stock buybacks manipulate the share price of company stock. So what you think you're buying may not actually be what you're buying. It's kind of an interesting story. You know, when you know, there's these cars that are knockoffs of like the AC Cobra, you know, Carroll Shelby cars, right? The outside looks like an AC Cobra and it's got a Volkswagen engine, right? So you got to be careful what you're buying. And that kind of equates to this. You may think you're buying a good company because they beat earnings per share, but that was because they did a lot of stock buybacks to do that. McDonald's is one of those companies. But anyway, this is what Tom had to say about stock buybacks.
I'm a free markets person, so if you want to buy back your stock, go for it. I'd rather see companies really innovate more and add workers and build factories and do stuff like that. But I see the point when you have an Apple that has just incredible earnings growth rates. I see people that say, oh, they should buy a company like Tesla. Tesla's losing money. Why would someone want to buy a company that's losing money? Now, look, they're buying way too much stock right here at these levels, and I think that this could be a problem for them.
And he goes on to, and again, you know, this is the idea of stock buybacks, and he goes on to talk about why that this is a problem, because Apple, the differential is do you buy back stock or do you spend the money to innovate? And that's the question.
The fact is that they don't really have a new killer market-changing product. I mean, AirPods are great. I bought them all last year for my kids. Maybe they'll buy them for me this year. But when a company just does buybacks and ignores the growth for the future, it's like IBM. IBM, over decades, had four or five periods where they went sideways for over 10 years before they made a new high. And they reinvented themselves each time. But this last period, they were buying back tons of stock at high levels, and I think they bought it all with debt. They didn't grow, and they haven't grown. And they're just sort of an annuity-type business where they have the same earnings every single year. And they bought back well over $100 billion worth of stock with debt. And if you look at the average cost, it's about 25% higher than where their current stock price is now. And that's a poor allocation of capital, especially when you're paying interest on it.
And, you know, this is one of the things that we do talk about in today's article as well, is that, you know, when you take a look at earnings and profits, these are two very different things. And as an investor, what you pay for is the profitability of a company. What you're paying for is future cash flows, future profitability, so that you make more money. You're an investor in the company. The problem is for investors, we have typically gotten away from actually investing in fundamentals. We just chase whatever's going up in price. So, you know, it's a cool company. They make a neat product or whatever it is. Doesn't matter. They're losing money out the wazoo. We're going to buy it anyway because it's a cool thing, right? So Beyond Meat, cannabis companies, et cetera, have all turned out to be horrid investments because we were chasing what was hot rather than what was fundamentally sound. He makes an interesting comment at the end of the interview, talking about how you can apply technical allocations or technical analysis to politics. And he has a view on what's happening with the election.
I think that we could see a recession next year. Going into the election is very dicey. I also run DeMarc indicators on all the predicted and real clear politics candidates. And I can say that Elizabeth Warren peaked about a month ago with a DeMarc 13 on top, and we'll see where she ends up. And we looked at it with Trump and Clinton right ahead of the election. And I said, look, right before hedge fund telemetry started, you're not going to believe this, but Trump's holding in here and Hillary's starting to fade with the DeMarc indicators. And
Turned out. So who's the potential laggard here that's got the DeMarc 13 exhaustion? Is that Kamala Harris?
She's actually had a downside DeMarc 13 on the downside. So she might make up a little ground. I don't think much, but I think Mayor Pete has been improving, but he just had an upside exhaustion signal. I think when Paul Tudor Jones said he likes Pete.
So that was pretty much it.
Paul's actually, I could see him being all for Mayor Pete. He likes very smart people that are very center.
Yeah. And what's interesting is this, we actually recorded this interview about 2 weeks ago. And Pete has now peaked in his most recent poll. So he was pretty close to being accurate on that one. So that entire interview is being released today at noon. It's with Thomas Thornton, hedge fund telemetry CEO. And again, that'll be out at noon today on our website. We go through the markets. We go through a lot of different stuff, talking about investing and cycles and what's happening here and what to be on to watch out for as we go into next year. That's on the website at noon today. Simply go by realinvestmentadvice.com, click on the YouTube tab. We'll be right back.
Load up on guns.
Investment show podcasts are now available on iTunes.
Listen anyplace, anytime
at iTunes.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with our RIA advisor's free financial planning tool, MyBlocks. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help to determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlocks, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the client portal tab, RIAAdvisors.com.
And good morning, 6:48, as we get ready to wrap up the show for this morning, getting you ready for your work day. And, of course, this is the pre-hump day edition. So, by the way, this is Christmas season, which means everybody has parties to go to and all kinds of stuff happening, and we're all going to be very busy. And of course, we just got we're not actually through with Cyber Monday, because apparently Cyber Monday runs through Wednesday now. Black Friday.
Never ends.
I know, right? Black Friday starts on the previous Wednesday, and now Cyber Monday is the following Wednesday. Today is Giving Tuesday, though.
Yes.
So you'll see a lot of promotions out today about Giving Tuesday. So after you've been spending, you know, I'm sitting there going, I've been giving for 3 days, right?
I'm give out.
I'm broke. But today is Giving Tuesday. So this is the day to think about your favorite charities and organizations that can use a little bit of financial assistance and help there. So, you know, Giving Tuesdays are an important part of our holiday giving spirit. So that's going on today. But, you know, the retail sales situation is, we talked about this before, is that, you know, we talk about Black Friday. And it was interesting yesterday, there was an article out where we spent record amount, for Black Friday. But Black Friday started on Wednesday. So we accumulate all that up now and say, this is what we spent on Friday. used to be that we just shopped on Friday. And maybe, you know, my wife brought up a really great point about this. She goes, I get it. You know, stores are going to be open and they're going to sell you stuff regardless, right? If you're willing to show up there at 3 a.m. in the morning and wait outside, they're going to open up the store to sell you stuff.
Yeah.
But maybe we as consumers need to go, you know what? We're not going to go shop on Thursday. We're going to spend time with our family. We'll go shop on Friday and then show up on Friday to shop and maybe just take back your holiday a bit rather than, you know, trying to rush through your Thanksgiving so you can get to the mall on time to go fight other people. Whatever you want, right? Maybe kind of, you know, bring it back. See, we don't do anything on Thanksgiving. That's family day.
Oh yeah.
So we don't shop. We
lay low.
Yeah. Right. So, but anyway,
that Black Friday scene, man, that's like a bad episode of WWE.
I know. I mean, people are going to start showing up in body armor. You know. Yeah. And really, what are you trying to? What is it that's so important that you've got to get that you can't basically buy it online now? That's the other thing, right?
For about the same price,
yeah, pretty much. So it's just the thrill of the hunt, I guess. You know, we're back to our caveman days that we all need to show up in a herd and go hunt down a Tyrannosaurus yeah. Rex and beat it to death, right?
Yeah, baby, so, the thrill's gone.
when I hunt down that Apple iPod I've been wanting, so
I'm at the point now. We're all going to Amazon for saltine crackers.
Yeah, so you know? One of the big season items is AirPods, right?
And
Tom Thornton was just talking about that.
Yeah.
You know, he had bought AirPods for his kids, and I make my kids buy their own AirPods.
Yeah,
you know, they're like $110-$115, something like that. So they're not cheap.
Are they worth it?
Well, they
are they that good?
No, they're not. There are better products out there that are actually cheaper, but people buy it because it's Apple, right? You know, if it's an Apple product, I got to have it because it's Apple, right? There's better products out there from Beats and other companies, but hey, got to have Apple because it's Apple, and that's the thing. And people pay more for it. But what's interesting is I make my kids buy their own stuff, right? You want iPods? Go get iPods. You know, if it's out of your account. Well, the problem is they're easily stolen. Right?
Yeah. There's no wires.
Well, there's no wires. So, but they come in a little case. It's a self-charging case. And so, you know, they've got them in their backpack or whatever at school. And because they've got to be with the cool kids, right? And so somebody just simply reaches in the backpack and takes the iPod, the AirPods, and pairs it to their phone. And voila, they're gone. There's no real security issue here. Both my kids have had theirs stolen.
Really?
By their kids at school. And it's like, well, duh. You know, you're going to take your $115 AirPods to school. There's a bunch of kids that can't afford to buy their own. So, you know,
why
do you think is going
to
happen?
Why are they even taking AirPods to school in the first place?
Look, this is a whole new world we live in, Brent.
It's a whole new world we live in. Yeah.
My kids my kids carry backpacks to school.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's in the backpacks? Not books.
In addition to AirPods.
Yeah. In addition to AirPods, maybe a couple of notebooks, but, you know, textbooks, all that, a lot of their homework's now online.
Well, those books are heavy, you know.
I know.
You don't carry that heavy stuff around.
And then they don't come with instruction manuals on how to use them. So, you know, but no, it's just simply, the world's different. I mean, yeah. they are on technology at school. They're at home. It's everywhere. It's pervasive. Mm. And that's why I changed the Wi-Fi password at my house just to... It's mostly just fun to watch them panic. Wi-Fi's out! Oh my God!
You have to earn access.
Exactly. Do your chores.
Yeah.
But
that's the only regret that I had, that we didn't have Wi-Fi when my kids were kids. I couldn't do that.
Yeah, I know. But it was easier back then when you were raising kids. Yeah. My wife and I were talking about that when we were growing up the other day. It's you know. My wife's talking about how when she was young, she was crossing Westheimer to go to a convenience store. I think it was a 7-Eleven, and got hit by a car coming back. But you know, back then it was like Westheimer was like a 2-lane road.
No kidding.
It's not like it is today.
Right.
Right. And the other day, where my house is, there's a Kroger's literally across the street and down about a quarter mile. Mm-hmm. And my wife said, well, I need some potatoes. This was getting ready for Thanksgiving. So I walked.
Well,
I know this is shocking. I walked. My daughter was astonished that I walked to the store. She was very concerned that I was going to get mugged or killed walking across the street to Kroger's to get some potatoes. And literally when I got back, my wife was like, oh, she was so concerned about it. She was like asking me, like, should we go pick him up? You know, should we go get? It's like, seriously, we walk places growing up. And this is something that's, you know, we used to get on bikes and just ride everywhere.
If it was
everywhere.
Too far to walk, you rode your bike.
Right. Yeah. This is something that is foreign to kids today. Yeah.
In August.
Yeah, even in Houston in August, yes. You rode your bike. But no, this is just something that's very foreign to kids today because everybody's so concerned about, look, my wife deals with this, right? Mm. She doesn't want her daughter walking to school because she's like, somebody may snatch her up, right? But we've gotten so paranoid about what, because of all the, you know, crazy stuff we see on social media and the television. Mm-hmm. You know, that stuff has always existed. The difference is that now we see every little minute of it all day long, everywhere we look. Yeah. It's always been there. We were just naive growing up that it was actually going on because it wasn't in our face 24/7 every time we turned around.
Wasn't, you know, as well publicized.
Right. Yeah. You had to watch the 10 o'clock news and most
on one of three channels.
On one of three channels. to know what was going on. And most of that stuff was like 3 days old by the time it got there. So,
by the way, you know whose birthday was yesterday?
Whose?
Kitterick.
Really?
Yeah.
It was yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
Is she still alive?
Yeah.
I did not.
Bunny Orsak.
Yeah, no, he's got to be what?
She.
I mean, she. Sorry. She's got to be how old?
Like
900?
I dare not say. But whatever it is, she looks great for
her age. She looks... that's what I say. I just told you my wife's birthday was the 18th celebration of her 29th birthday.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, you celebrate it the entire month.
Exactly.
If you're smart.
So she actually has been going 2 weeks before her birthday, and it's still going on because she's got another birthday celebration with her mom this weekend. Yeah. So she's got it made. And then Christmas.
Yeah.
Then New Year's.
Yeah.
Then Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm off the hook. But I'm gifted out. By the time I get to February, I'm broke and gifted out. So she's... I have to do really well for the next couple of Christmases.
How it works at our house, too.
Yeah. When's your wife's birthday?
August the 29th.
Well, that's not too bad. You got a break.
Not much.
Mine's December, January, February. Yeah. I mean, I'm literally back to back.
We've got the grandkids in September.
Oh, okay.
You know.
You still have more of a break than I do. Mm. I have September, April. So I have April, June, September, December, January, February. So
you run out of knuckles.
Exactly. But oyster season's in there somewhere.
All the months ending in R.
R. That's correct.
Yeah, baby.
You're an oyster fan?
I am.
Oh, those are terrible.
No, I love them.
Terrible. How do you like them?
Dip them in milk. Roll them in cornmeal.
Okay. I thought you meant dip them in milk and eat
and
them.
And fry them in the garage.
Yeah, I'm not an oyster fan.
I love them.
Really? Well, the only reason is when I grew up, my mom would cook them constantly.
Oh, really?
And yeah. She
wished I'd known.
Yeah, yeah. And basically, I burned out on them, and now I can't eat them anymore.
We used to eat them by the gallon, literally.
that's what happened in my house and why I can't eat them anymore. You know, the other thing is, you know, the back in the day, right, you used to have those meters on the outside of the house.
Yes.
That measured your electricity.
With the little wheel that span around.
Yeah. So my dad figured out that you can go out there and take that off the house and spin the wheel backwards and lower your electric bill.
I'm hoping the statute of limitations has run out on that story.
He's dead. You can't get him now.
They'd figure out a way.
They're digging him up.
Never underestimate the power of a power company.
Exactly. Yeah, ask PG&E. Anyway, all right, that wraps up the show for the day. All right, we will be back tomorrow, Wednesday's edition. We'll see what happens in the markets today. Futures are pointing lower. Again, like we've been talking about here, this has been all about trade, and the real issue here is whether or not this trade deal that was supposedly right around the corner is now off till after the election. This is something the markets likely are not going to deal with well, because this pulls one of the supports out from under the market. So we'll pay attention to what happens today. We'll be writing this up. We'll be releasing our earnings report here in just a few minutes on our website, realinvestmentadvice.com. And of course, send us your questions, comments, and emails. Look, have a great day. It's Tuesday. It's the day before hump day. Chris Salcedo is coming right up. Don't go away. I had a little money. It's a rich man's world. It's a rich man's world.